Welcome to A Moment with Modern Mentors, a podcast series by Digital Collective Co., where we soak up wisdom, anecdotes, and actionable tips from Australian startups, female founders, business leaders, industry pioneers, and C-suite executives. In season three of A Moment with Modern Mentors, we go behind the scenes. We ask our guests what it takes to be a leader. Not just the gloss and the glamour of leadership, but the setbacks, the failings, the insecurity, the stories that make up the person that they are today and what it took to get there, the hard work, and then the reward. We can't wait to share A Moment with Modern Mentors behind the scenes. Stay tuned for all the episodes. Hi, Jodie. It is so exciting to do this. Tell us a little bit about who you are and how this came about.
Thank you, Mia. It's actually really lovely being on the other side of the table in terms of on the receiving end of questions, as opposed to sort of wearing the coaching hat or the therapist hat, because it's actually really nice to be vulnerable and to just be real. I love this opportunity. I have been really close to anxiety all my life. Really close to anxiety, having family members who have experienced fairly extreme anxiety, experiencing anxiety myself as a person at this stage in my life and as an anxiety expert, understanding myself now. And when I think about the child that's still there in my heart, understanding the child so much more that I didn't actually necessarily know the why earlier on in my life, but it was there. The passion to help people has always been there. My mum was born into horrific trauma in growing up in Eastern Europe, or being born in Eastern Europe in 1941. So you can imagine the state of play at that time. So she was taken into a labor camp when she was just in her first year of life, in her second and third year of life, separated from her parents and hidden in barns and hidden in attics, you know, your Anne Frank kind of story. But thank God she lived to tell her stories. So sort of fast forward from that into Jodie being born, I was born into a world where my mum still experienced a lot of the trauma of her life experiences. And the byproduct of that is anxiety, is fear of something bad happening and the behavioral consequences of that. Really, from birth, I was born as a parent to my mum. With that, both my parents had a very loving relationship, lots of love in my family, but my mum experiencing the trauma of war and the absence of what that can create. As somebody who didn't necessarily have the stability of your mum is your rock, I had to grow up being my own rock. And the byproduct of that is wanting a lot of certainty, a lot of control in your environment, perfectionism kicking in, and fearing the consequences if you're not everything to everyone or if you're not perfect in every way. And that's what anxiety is. Growing up with a deep affinity to that sense of challenge around uncertainty. And then the evolution of that, wanting to help people through this experience of anxiety, and a joy in doing that, and a deep empathy for what that feels like based on my own experiences as well as the experiences of my family.
It's an incredible story, Jodie. I just really love the story and the way that you have kind of shared that piece of intel about your mum's history, but how it also kind of comes up through the family line, regardless of whether you plan it or not. When did you know that that was your deep mission to kind of make that part of what you wanted to do as a psychologist? Was it a natural instinct that you knew that that was a career choice for you?
No, in fact, I've always loved art. I've always loved creating. I really enjoy the creative process. And I did a lot of art for high school. I did 3-unit art for my HSC. I ended up coming first in the state for art. There's that perfectionism kicking in. But I was channeling it in art. I thought I'd be in advertising and design. But the interesting thing is, for my HSC, this is already the, you know, trying to therapize myself through my art. So I did a series of multimedia artworks on emotions in children. So it was a bit of sort of predicting the future in a way, because at that stage I thought, here I am, you know, doing lots of art, I'm going to get into advertising. So I started doing a Bachelor of Design in Visual Communications, and I was just really crap at that. I crashed and fell. It was not my calling. And so I realized, this is not my calling. What is my calling? And I stuffed around and did the travel thing and just enjoyed life. And so didn't know straight away that psychology was my calling. But I said, well, I want to do psychology. I want to give it a go. So I dropped out of design, did my undergrad in psychology and loved it, and ended up child and adolescent, surprise, surprise, was something that I really wanted to specialize in. So I did my undergrad thesis in child and adolescent psychology, loved it, then thought that clinical psychology would be my calling, but actually got poached out of the aspiration towards clinical psychology into corporate, and ended up getting an amazing first job out of uni in management consulting, in change management consulting for PwC, leadership development, business strategy, and just relishing every single opportunity that came my way, because it was like a completely unknown. It was almost like a gift that dropped into my lap. And these sorts of foundational experiences in management consulting, it was so brilliant because it laid down phenomenal opportunities across industry, across working with leaders from a very young age and being thrown into these big projects and things. Loved it, loved it, loved it. But my calling was still towards the clinical. So fast forward many years, let's say. And then I did a doctor of clinical psychology and did doctoral research in anxiety, bringing it back to my roots with a view to building anxiety prevention programs in schools. So adult, child and adolescent doctor of clinical psychology and deep alignment to a mission to improve lives. And then because of my foundations in a practical sense, first working at PwC, then working at Macquarie Bank for many years and developing some really powerful corporate skills, I set up the anxiety clinic and I set up our MindStrength High Performance Consultancy to be able to improve lives in the corporate realm, in the clinical realm, but also with community working in schools and adults, kids and teens. I worked and trained at Harvard Medical School for a while in child and adolescent, and just honed in on some deep skills, worked at St. Vincent's Hospital in their anxiety research unit for a while as well as part of my training. And here we are, sort of fast forward, having developed a methodology called the MindStrength Method and deep alignment to a purpose to create a world where every person can manage anxiety and thrive, but ultimately a broader mission to improve lives on scale, leveraging the skills and experience that I've had.
Do you think that there is some correlation, I'm sure you're going to say yes to this, but between the anxiety in adults, whether they be in leadership roles or in just the average human being, and their childhood? Is that what the connection was for you? Was it tying or joining the dots between children's upbringings, children, adolescents, teens, and their ability to kind of overcome their mindset or to leverage their mindset for leadership? Was there a tie between those two topics for you particularly?
Undoubtedly, we're a byproduct of our nature, the genes and the neurochemistry that we're born with, as well as nurture our life experiences. And oftentimes when I'm working with leaders, it's not always, but we bring our whole selves to work. So it's about helping an individual holistically. And sometimes if there is a traumatic childhood experience, it's really important that we go there and look at how that has informed the nature of how individuals operate as adults, because that child inside us who's experienced trauma, it has a way of showing up. And whether it's the hijacking amygdala that takes us to this is dangerous, it's that brainstem pathway in our neuroscience. It's a real speed dial. That's the trauma pathway that tips us into fight or flight as adults and as leaders. And oftentimes the fight or flight pathway is a deep need for certainty and control. Often what that does drive are phenomenally capable human beings. So whether it's working with Olympians in a high performance sporting context, or whether it's working with a leader, this is the double-edged sword of anxiety. Is trauma can actually drive phenomenal outcome because of a discomfort with uncertainty. I must be perfect. I must know that everything's going to go well. I must work harder. This is a double-edged sword because some of these behaviors can tip into sub-optimized behaviors, and we know them to be unsustainable. It's helping individuals move out of that pathway and realign to high performance habits, alignment to passion and purpose, and alignment to not fear-driven actions, but values-aligned actions. That's core to the mind strength methodology that I've developed that I work through with my clients.
Is the mind strength methodology, I mean, obviously it's your IP, but is it something that's kind of come from your own experiences personally and your family and your situation? Like, talk us through how you came about this as a process.
Really decades of working with individuals as well as decades of research. So the Mind Strength Method is built on deep evidence-based strategies of clinical psychology, positive psychology, and business strategy, as well as understanding our neuroscience. So as an anxiety expert, what anxiety talks to very deeply is our primitive drivers as human beings. It's probably one of our most primitive parts of who we are as humans, because it's our survival instinct. It's anxiety is our physiological reaction to perceived threat or real threat in our environment. And so when you understand anxiety, it allows me to very much understand human behavior and the predictability of human behavior. And so it's highly amenable to creating a methodology that really works across all human beings. So it talks to our common human experience, as opposed to talking to necessarily getting too caught up in the diversity of human experience. And yes, there is the magnificence of diversity. And of course, we all bring our beautiful diversity to our experiences. However, the Mind Strength methodology, it draws on my experience with hundreds of thousands of people over many years. These wrinkles are the giveaway. The wrinkles are a giveaway of wisdom. Let's reframe wrinkles and say wrinkles equals wisdom, right? Hence, I have a lot of wisdom. So deeply embedded in research, deeply embedded in clinical and corporate practice at the coalface, where I dig deep with human beings. And so the Mind Strength methodology has a lot of proof cases to demonstrate its efficacy in transforming human behavior and enabling people to build high performance and thrive. So there are two pathways to the methodology. One is a clinical pathway, which is where I've written the book and captured my methodology in the Mind Strength Method, 4 Steps to Curb Anxiety, Conquer Worry, and Build Resilience. So that's really talking to its capability of changing lives in a clinical context, anxiety, stress, low mood, burnout, building confidence, helping people to conquer imposter syndrome. But step 4 of the methodology is a whole well-being framework to help enable people to thrive in a sustainable way. But the other pathway is in a high performance context. You know, we truly are all in this together. The privilege that I have as a therapist and as a high performance coach and as a keynote speaker is really digging deep with many people, having the privilege of seeing people at their most vulnerable, enables me to deeply recognize that we really are all in this together. You know, the problems, the challenges that we experience are so very similar. And the strategies help across so many, across cultures, across geography, across ages, across, you know, the roles that we experience, whether we're a parent dealing with issues with our children or whether we're a CEO working in a multinational context, the problems that we experience are very similar.
And do you feel that your own personal experiences in all those things has helped you to write a book, to launch an anxiety clinic, to work on stage and present keynote speeches? Do you feel like your own experiences with anxiety and also kind of running businesses kind of make you who you are, obviously shape you along the way? Tell us how you've kind of overcome and been able to leverage your own anxiety to do each of those things, because they're enormous, you know, writing a book, enormous, you know, launching a clinic yourself and employing people, huge. How do you do it?
Well, certainly my experience with my own anxiety is core to what motivates me to help other people, you know, because there is that deep empathy. I can't profess necessarily to put myself in the shoes of somebody else, because everybody comes to the situation with, you know, being the expert of themselves. But what I can truly talk to is deep empathy for the challenge that anxiety can create, but also for the superpower that anxiety can create, and that compassion, that kindness, that dedication to wanting other people to be safe and to be well. That's what anxiety is. And when I bring it back to my own values, I'm very passionate about helping people. I deeply care about other people, you know. So these are, that kindness and that compassion is authentic to who I am. And so when I'm on stage, or when I'm working in a coaching or a therapy capacity, it is deep authenticity as my heart-driven passion to help other people. However, there is a fine line in the work that I do. Integrity and ethics and boundaries are critically important in the role that I play as a high performance coach or a clinical psychologist, or a person who, you know, wants to change the world through a methodology. And the boundaries, it's very important that it's not about me. That's ingrained in my training as a clinical psychologist, is it's not about me. It's serving at the highest level for my client. So the empathy based on my own experience is very much there, because I can relate to the experience of anxiety, and the authenticity is very much there. So whether I'm on stage or whether I'm doing like what we're doing now, it's deep heart connection with people, with communities. So it's kind of strategic mind and heart is what pulls me forward. So it's true here and here is when I'm this, like this, I'm sure you can relate to this, Mia, because knowing you as an equally deeply empathic human being and with a deep dedication to helping other people, my heart is what pulls me. But it's also very much strategy and connecting strategically to constantly think about what is in the strategic best interest of my client. So it's not about me when I'm engaging with my clients.
But your lived experiences obviously help shape the way that you respond and can help, because of your own belief system and your own heart and brain.
To that point, my own journey as well. So through my own journey and through my own vulnerabilities and challenges, it's recognizing the critical importance of being able to master your mindset and take yourself out of your own blind spots. And it's the power of, I suppose, my own personal journey through learning about living the Mind Strength methodology myself. So the importance of the capacity to master your mindset in enabling you to flourish and thrive and move out of vulnerability. So creating the Mind Strength methodology and practicing it myself is part of this. So it's the capacity, as examples, to recognize if you're being driven by a need to please others or being driven by a need for perfectionism in order to get certainty and control, leading by example in trying to, or practicing taking myself out of that and realigning to heart and realigning to sitting with the discomfort of uncertainty has been very much part of the evolution as well.
I probably only kind of recognized this strategy of being able to catch yourself in doing things that are bad habits, let's call, or, you know, old habits, and watching. I think someone kind of described this view of watching yourself and just kind of giving, you know, acknowledging first and foremost what you're doing. Is there a way, a methodology of how you do this to yourself? You know, because I can imagine it's anything like me. It's all the time, really. It's kind of a constant watch and analysis. But you're the expert. So is there an inner voice talking to yourself? It's like, Jodie, come on.
Well, it's doing my best to practice the strategies that I deliver and recognizing, in essence, it's human habits. In a way, it's kind of what our brain is wired to do, is to take us to a need for certainty. Certainty equals safety. So yes, it's very much that third person perspective, that constant self, as you know, self-awareness, self-consciousness is really critical to high performance. And certainly as a leader, critical to high performance leadership, mindfulness is a superpower. So core to the Mind Strength methodology and core to enabling high performance leadership is that constant check-in. Where am I? Am I in fight? Am I in flight? Am I in a need for certainty and control? Can I build that beautiful self-awareness? Can I breathe? Can I sit with the discomfort of moving out of that? Can I bring it back to heart? Can I bring it back to values? What are my strategic goals? You know, so this is the work that I do with my clients to enable clients or leaders to lead and be the best that they can be is leading by example as well. Mm. And no, it's not easy. Not easy.
Well, I was just, as you were saying that, I was thinking, I think we're all very good at kind of, especially if you're an expert in a certain area, in telling someone else how to be better for them. You can see it very clearly when it's someone else. And obviously in a therapeutic situation, I'm sure you can see very clearly what the best way forward for a client is or an audience is. Are you as good at applying it to yourself as you are to others?
I'm probably pretty shit at applying it to myself.
You're human.
I'm human. I'm human. And that is the thing. You know, our brain is designed to worry. Our brain is designed to tip us into fight or flight because we give a shit, right? Because we care, because we want to protect. And so it's allowing myself to respond with kindness and compassion to my own human experience and recognizing that, you know, it's all of these things. The critical voice will be there. The worry stories will be there. It's about changing your relationship with them and having clarity on your values. And for me, you know, core to my values is continual improvement. You know, core to my values is kindness and compassion. So it's about thinking, am I aligned to that? Am I being kind to myself on this journey of leadership, on this journey of a mission to help improve lives around the world? You know, am I being kind to myself around focusing on effort and being comfortable in effort? So it's not when you are on a mission to change the world, it's easy to get caught up, what I call self-flagellation, whipping, not good enough, need to do more, need to be more. And it is easy to fall into the habit of fight or flight. And so that constant consciousness is incredibly important. But no, it's not easy. But, you know, they say patience is a virtue. Mm. Patience is not my virtue, but it truly is a virtue.
Tell us about some situations or times or things that have examples of situations where you've just gone, oh, I just would love to be able to do this differently. Like, have you got specific examples along the way that you're like, oh gosh, I wish I just did that differently?
In business, it's really hard to get the people side of business right. That's a really tricky one, especially when you're inherently wired to want to think the best of people. I don't know if that's inherent wiring, but that's just the way, that's the way I like to be. I like to think the best of people. And I am a very much a glass half full person. I sit in hopefulness and optimism, and I like to think the best of people. When that is the case, sometimes you can jump into hopefulness and optimism around individuals. And there's the challenge of, you know, that whole thing about, well, what I certainly talk to in coaching is really ensuring that values drive every stage of the business trajectory. And recruitment, it's so incredibly important to recruit, as you know, in the work that you do, to recruit and build a team that's deeply aligned to values and deeply aligned to purpose, and to recruit slow based on that, to recruit slow and to say, is this person really aligned to values? Is this person truly part of the culture that I want to be true to? That's hard to get right.
I think you've hit on something really interesting there, and that's the word slow, because I think it probably when you're dealing with high performance or you're very ambitious yourself or you've got a lot of big plans, going slow is really hard, right? Because you can see it all, you want it all, it's all there. But like you say, the recruitment to ensure that that growth is supporting it and that growth itself has to kind of work. And if you do make a few mistakes along the way, you kind of rush into recruiting someone that might not be values aligned. Everything ahead can go wrong because of a few bad decisions that have been rushed. What do you think about the idea of slow versus fast? I mean, I would say that you are probably a fast person, but how do you feel about the concept of slow?
I don't do slow well. I don't do slow well. And then you can get burned by that. When you want to make quick decisions, that is not necessarily good, especially when you want to plug a hole, right? Because sometimes, especially with higher growth, when you're in a business that is growing and you recognize that it's all about the power of the team and you can't do things yourself, and it's all about joy in delegation and joy in the power of the team, it's not necessarily going to go well. Taking time and really following your intuition is so incredibly important. And we don't always have the luxury to take our time, but it does bite us in the behind time to time when we don't. But the thing that, you know, if there was a top tip that comes to mind, I'm sure there's many things, but one thing that's coming to mind right now is the incredible power of intuition. It tells us things all the time.
Even though we don't want to listen.
Yeah, we don't want to listen. We're choosing to say, leave me alone, intuition. I want to do this and I want to do this fast. But yeah, it's not necessarily the way to go. Sometimes it's about recognizing that our brain, sometimes quick decisions are great. You know, our brain is wired towards what's called heuristics, which is our capacity to make fast decisions based on life experience, and that sometimes will serve us really well. It is very important to ask yourself, what are my drivers here? Am I being driven by a need, a quick fix need, or is this individual, or is this move aligned to first and foremost values? Am I clear on my values, first of all? And then is this move aligned to values? Is this move aligned to strategy? And am I being driven by wisdom here and intuition?
Do you feel you had to make sacrifices along the way throughout your life, throughout your career, for your career? Do you feel that there's been things that you've had to kind of come to crossroads and go, no, I'm gonna have to make a hard decision because I want something else, you know, whether it be family or helping family members? Are there times in your life you can see that the decision you've made is actually, in hindsight, you can go, actually, that was good. I made the right decision there, but it was hard at the time.
100%. I mean, writing a book, oh my gosh, writing a book requires absolute grit. Grit, determination, passion, alignment to purpose, tenacity, patience, patience, patience. You know, to write a book that you're just incredibly proud of, it takes so much time and endurance. It's a very, very hard thing to do. That was grit. So writing a book, and I've got three children who are core to my deepest values of family and love and being the protector of my family. But writing a book takes many, many hours. So that was dogged determination. And, you know, my children didn't see much of me when I was writing a book. My husband, who I adore, didn't see much of me when I was writing a book. Bill's Cafe did see a lot of me. There you go, a plug for Bill's Cafe in Bondi Beach, good place to go. And they kindly let me use one of their tables for many hours on end. Writing a book in a cafe is a really good thing because there's something about that white noise that helps you to just really focus many, many hours. But boy, am I glad I did it, because if you're deeply on a mission to improve lives on scale, when you can equip a person with a $20, $25 book, which is the equivalent of thousands of dollars worth of my therapy in a book, that was just mission driven all the way. So very, very happy that I did that.
And you've got three kids coming out of their teen years into their adulthood. And that's a big achievement in itself, if you ask me. How have you managed to do all of this work, you know, launch businesses, work on the road, do keynote speaking, have a clinic? Have you done all that whilst kind of managing a family?
I think I'm pretty good at bringing things back to my heart. What you see is what you get, really. Like what you see, Mia, we do some wonderful things together. What you see is what you get. And so there's, so authenticity is just one of my core values. And so when you're heart-centered and there's no bullshit, like there's very few extra layers, it allows me to not have to invest too much time in those extra layers. When I'm with my kids, I'm heart connected. When I'm with my clients, I'm heart connected. When I'm on a stage, I'm heart connected. I suppose I'm living a purpose that's aligned to helping people. When you live a purpose that's aligned to helping people, that in itself creates dopamine. So there's many times, you know, most of the time work is not work to me. Work is joy. Work is passion. That's true. I consider myself, it's a privilege to do what I do. And I'm deeply grateful for working in that space of helping people. And when I'm aligned to purpose in that sort of state, my work is not work. And so that does give me a lot of inherent, as I said, serotonin, dopamine that enables it to be sustainable, to work really long hours and to move forward. It is very much about mindful engagement. So when you're with your kids, be with your kids. Mm. When you're with your clients, be with your clients and recognize that it's about quality engagement. It's not necessarily about quantity, but that's okay if quality is there. Quality trumps quantity and being aligned to your values. When you're not, then agitation kicks in. When you're in fight or flight, that's agitation. And oftentimes it's because you're not being driven by the things that are important to you. You're being driven by fear or not being kind to yourself or agitation of some sort.
What would you say in those situations are some really good little kind of tips to bring you back? Because I think that's, you know, common for most people in this day and age that they're busier than they've ever been, and probably work and personal merge into one a lot more than it used to, because we work from home or we partially work from home. We see our kids and we've got a Zoom going on and there's a lot more kind of crossover. But I think probably something I hear a lot is that people are like, I'm kind of disconnected from my family, or, you know, work is merging into my private life. And what some tips to kind of help feel you're able to focus on the things that you're focusing on and not get distracted, and give yourself a kind of a good time, like a pat on the back for doing the best you can. What would you say are some tips to help people do that more successfully?
I think you gave a really important tip, which is giving yourself a pat on the back for doing the best you can. That's a pretty good tip. In that, it's about certainly being clear on your goals. However, once you're clear on your goals, once you've taken time to build clarity, which again is core to the work that I do with my clients, is creating that clarity. So, you know, we do so often get caught up in the treadmill or the tsunami of life, and it bowls us over, and we don't take time to think and reflect on what is truly important to you. It's the power of the pause. It's the power of reflection and taking time to say, you are worth it. You are worth investing in yourself to think about what is important to you. What do you value? Once you've taken that time to stop and reflect, it's then about alignment to those things. When you have clarity, and in a business context, let's say, or even in a life context, thinking about what your purpose is and what your goals are, then taking a step away from that and bringing the focus back to effort and being kind to yourself for effort, being kind to yourself in our inherent imperfection. You know, really, are you being true to your own psychological safety, right? We talk about psychological safety in a corporate context, but are you being safe with yourself? How are you responding to your own mistakes? So all of these things are important, but some top tips really are quality trumps quantity. But in that, 2 minutes is better than no minutes when it comes to self-care, and consistency is more important than quantity. So thinking about who we are as biological beings, as human beings, we are animals and we require certain things to enable our functioning to be sustainable. And what we require is respecting our body to respect our emotional well-being. So bringing it back to fundamentals around making sure that you're staying hydrated. I've got my coffee next to me, but typically, normally I have my water next to me. Where's my, oh, here's my water. There. Are you staying hydrated with water, not whiskey? Are you taking time to get out in nature? Or are you just surrounded by technology, right? Are you moving, doing a certain amount of movement every day? Are you connecting with the people who are your tribe? Are you making sure that you get enough sleep? And I'm not talking about, are you being perfect in this? Consistency rather than quantity, even consistency, you know, moving out of perfectionism, 5 minutes walk around the block is going to change your neuroscience out of the sympathetic nervous system back into the parasympathetic nervous system. So leading by example around those things is what I am ensuring that I do, taking myself out of the bullshit story that I'm not good at self-care, because that's just a story. What do we have more control over than self-care? So it's our duty. If we want to be caring for others, it's our duty to lead by example and to take 5 minutes out of the day to respect those fundamentals.
What are you doing for your self-care routine?
The mornings are really important. So to start the day with movement, to start the day with connecting with my children is really important, and with my life partner, with my husband. That's food for my soul, really. Starting the day with beautiful, should I give a plug for what are these keep cups? I've actually forgotten the brand, but I'd love to give a plug because, you know, it's something, is it Frank Green? Is that?
Oh, yes, Frank Green. We love Frank Green.
Thank you. You can put it in your talking notes, right?
Do you ever find it hard to be in a routine of self-care, even though you know the benefits, you know what's best, you know that it's good for your mental health? Do you find it hard to actually kind of get into that routine, or is it something you've built a habit of over the years and you're very good at it?
I find it really hard. It's really hard because I also value my purpose, my work purpose, you know. I value achievement. I value all of this other stuff. So it's interesting. It's all this sort of grapple with what does work-life balance actually mean when you actually love the work that you do. Reflecting on this, when I do keynotes around burnout and when I'm working with my clients around burnout, it's not necessarily about not working long hours. It's about what is driving you. What is your mind? And so it's truly mastering your mindset is one of the critical factors in mitigating against burnout. Are you being driven by the not good enoughs, or are you being aligned to your purpose? Are you caught up in worry?
I mean, imposter syndrome happens to a lot of people when they've got no reason to feel it. What is that all about when you've got that imposter syndrome, or you have the thoughts one day you could feel really confident and the next minute you'd be like, oh, I can't do this?
I'll hold my hand up to being very intimately acquainted with imposter syndrome. Imposter syndrome and I share a bed.
Same.
Alongside my husband. So, yes, I'm starting to sound like Princess Diana. There were three people in this
place. Three of us.
My husband, myself, and imposter syndrome. Imposter syndrome is built out of a belief that you need to be perfect in order to be good enough. And that is built out of a, you know, as I talked about in my childhood experiences, a need for certainty and control because you don't necessarily have a rock that you can turn to. You have to be the one in control. And also conditional, when early life experiences are conditional and there's not that unconditional safety. That was some of my early life experiences as well, is not having safety in that space. You know, I was very fortunate to have certain pivotal people in my early life experiences who did provide that level of safety, but to a large extent, I had to be the provider of safety for myself. And so a need to be perfect to keep myself safe, because perfectionism means that there's no uncertainty, which equals safety. That is a belief that can kick in, which is not a high performance habit. Yes, it drives high performance for sure. It keeps you in fight or flight and it keeps you in the sympathetic nervous system. It feeds imposter syndrome. We have to challenge that belief because that's fear driven. We recognize, notice the story. It's not necessarily going to go away because some of these trauma stories, they can stay with us through a lifetime, but it's about changing your relationship with them and recognizing that you don't have to be defined. Am I allowed to swear on this podcast, Mia?
You are.
It's about fucking up sometimes, practicing being okay with imperfection and allowing yourself to be kind to yourself through those experiences. And that doesn't necessarily happen easily, but it's about awareness and moving back into kindness and compassion, which is the values that are drivers, and constant reminders around that space.
In a world where perfect is kind of available, you know, you can compare yourself to so many people who seem perfect, and for whatever reason or whatever they're projecting may or may not be the truth. But what do you suggest as a strategy for people to be able to lighten the load for themselves in that respect, push away the imposter syndrome?
To actually not push it away, but to accept it. So when we fight these things, when we fight worry, when we fight imposter syndrome, that keeps us in fight or flight. So sometimes that keeps us actually trapped in it. So acceptance is one of the most magnificent things. It's about accepting who we are, accepting our vulnerabilities, and just building awareness around them. So mindfulness is key, because mindfulness is observing, allowing intentionally, non-judgmentally, and making friends with the things that otherwise have proven challenging, but then accountability to moving back into values. So that is really, really critical in that space. That's one of the strategies.
Do you think that leaders who are addressing a number of challenges and making their steps towards being a leader, a better leader, do you think that they, you know, have techniques that they apply?
Well, in my experience with the leaders I've worked with, they apply the mind strength methodology. I've got a subjective bias there because that's the methodology that I use with the leaders I work with. But I think it's that consciousness. I think consciousness is, you know, whether it's leaders I've worked with or leaders who I've observed or individuals who've been my mentors, I think having mentors, having coaches, it's the capacity to take yourself out of ego is what is true to high-performing leaders. And that's what consciousness is. And when we take that to a deeper level, what is driving your behavior at any particular moment? You know, are you trying to demonstrate yourself? Are you being aggressive? Or are you people-pleasing? You know, what are these sorts of things that are taking hold? They are fight or flight drivers. Consciousness is your capacity to bring yourself back to heart, to bring yourself back to neutral, to bring yourself back to strategy, to bring yourself back to values. So, you know, you'll see these people who are, you know, if individuals who have done deep training with meditation, with mindfulness, it's that magnificent capacity to take, you know, I use a pendulum analogy, to take yourself out of fight or flight and bring yourself back to heart connection or neutral. I think that that's really fundamental to high performance leadership, to high performance athletes, is if they got caught up in self-flagellation or focusing on what if I make a mistake now? What if I don't do something well? No, you don't see, you know, Ash Barty wouldn't have been focused on her not good enough. So Ash Barty is like, what are my goals here? And then the power of repetition, the power of clarity, the power of a deep belief in continual improvement, and that's values.
You've just articulated that so clearly, and I feel that's going to be very helpful. Have you ever felt lonely along the way in your leadership journey? Has that been a feeling that's ever come up? Or if not, have there been other feelings that have been kind of striking for you?
I really like being connected with people. I don't think I'm necessarily an extrovert. I think that there's definitely introversion exceeds extroversion for me, but I actually do love being with people. That sounds a little bit strange, but true to my values is non-hierarchy. You know, I deeply believe in every human being a leader, and it just is about the environment that you create for psychological safety and kindness and compassion and acceptance. If we take a philosophy of every single person is a leader, then in a leadership space, you're never lonely. You know, I just certainly don't ascribe to this, you know, it's lonely at the top, because I feel like that's a really old school philosophy. I'm passionate about non-hierarchy. Just when you're authentic, I think authenticity is really part of connection.
It was Kate Sobrano, and she was talking about how she'd been given a Lifetime Achievement Award, and she was like, I'm not finished. Like, don't give me the Lifetime Achievement now, because I'm not done yet.
Oh, funny.
Even though she'd already achieved 40 years of work in the music industry, she still has so much more to give. Where are you at in your career? Are you at the top already, or is the top a long way off?
This is the power of imposter syndrome, right? It keeps you really humble. Imposter syndrome makes you always feel like you are just getting started, which is not necessarily healthy, right? Because you got to give yourself some credit. I'm just in such a joyous space. And it's values of continual improvement. It's values of curiosity, learning, development, growth are so core. Legacy, impact, they're my drivers. And so there's no destination when you are on a heart-driven mission to improve lives on scale. It's a joy. I have to tell the truth, it would be nice to get a Lifetime Achievement Award. That would be a nice thing. But I can kind of relate to what Kate was saying. It's kind of a funny thing as well. I feel like I'm just warming up, to be honest, Mia.
And are there any kind of really valuable lessons you've learned as a leader along the way that you think, oh gosh, I just bet people need to know this?
Valuable lessons. Been really lucky in having great mentors and great leaders, in whether it's in my professional context or in my personal life. So the power of mentoring is really important, to lean in to opportunities to learn and opportunities to grow, and take yourself out of judgment, because judgment creates blind spots. So that's very important. To our brain will go to judgment because that's a heuristic. That's a, you know, thinking fast rather than thinking slow. It creates blind spots. So enjoy the opportunities to learn, enjoy authentic relationships and the incredible importance of connection, because, you know, that's just who we are as human beings. When we talk to our fundamental needs, we are tribal beings, and connection with our tribe, people of similar values, seek out those people. You know, as a clinical psychologist, it's part of our ingrained training to always have therapy, to have coaches, to have sounding boards, you know. And so there's people in my life who play that role for me, who I have enormous respect for. And that way you're truly never alone, really.
Any advice you'd give to aspiring leaders or leaders who are on their journey that you think kind of would help them on their journey to the top, whatever that is, to them?
To knock on doors, but not in a needy capacity. Neediness is not a healthy position to be in, but recognize you are worth it. Listen to your intuition and say, you know, if you're on LinkedIn and you think you see somebody whose values resonate with you, connect. I mean, never has there been an easier time to connect with others that you relate to, that you respect. It's just a beautiful world. Yes, digital creates chaos sometimes and takes us away from nature that we need. However, at the same time, we want to make friends with this world that we're in, and to enjoy this digital space and enjoy the capacity to connect with people to enable learning and growth at every stage.
Thank you so much, Joni. That's been an absolute gorgeous conversation. I've absolutely loved it, and so much insight in there, so much help and kind of nurture and kindness that you've just shared with us. So I really appreciate your time today. And thank you so much for joining Moment with Modern Mentors.
One last message, Mia, on the back of what you said, choose kindness, choose love, share in abundance, add value, and don't do it because of a desire for reciprocity. Do it because it's values driven. The world works in wonderful ways when you give. People just bounce off the energy that you give out. Hold yourself accountable to what energy am I going to give out? And kindness and adding value in abundance, it's your choice, but you know that typically does serve individuals well.
What a perfect way to end the podcast. Thank you, Jodi.
Thanks, Mia. Take care.
Make sure you subscribe to our channel and stay tuned for more episodes from A Moment with Modern Mentors, coming your way soon.